Hey everybody, this is Eric DeMond, and you are now tuned into the Father Redeemed Podcast. Let's go. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are live, we are back. Episode 3. Didn't know we'd make it this far, but we did. Thank you guys for tuning in. This podcast is now available on not only Spotify, but also Apple Podcasts. So I appreciate the support. Please subscribe, listen in. My goal is to create a new podcast every week. My plan is to record on Fridays and release on Sunday afternoons. And so going forward, that'll probably be my schedule. But in any case, appreciate the love, appreciate the support. Please subscribe and share with all your friends, other weekend dads, and even, you know, your wives and you know, their sisters, their friends as well. Because I do think while we are talking primarily to weekend dads, to fathers who parent outside the home, there's going to be some stuff that we're going to talk about that I think can be very beneficial to women as well. You know, mothers, stepmothers, and the like. So stay tuned. Should be good for everybody. Today, I want to continue the discussion on, you know, the shift in the family dynamics within our society. How do we get here? How do we get to a state where there are more fathers outside the home than inside the home? As I mentioned in the last podcast, you know, divorce rate is hovering around 60% in America. In communities of color, that number's higher. There are more single parent households in America than there are two parent conventional households. And that's a problem. It's been a problem for a long time, at least the last 30, 40 years, as those numbers have skyrocketed. I talked a little bit in the last podcast about, you know, the genesis of all of this in the 1960s, you know, with the dependent child program, which eventually morphed into the child support enforcement program that currently penalizes a lot of fathers, a lot of weekend dads who, you know, through whatever circumstances ended up being outside the home, whether it's through divorce, or you got, you know, a young lady pregnant, you were never married, but because she is now, you know, the mother of your child, you automatically have to pay child support. And so you start off kind of behind the eight ball right off the bat, being a young father who is dealing with the family court system and trying to be a parent to your child from outside the home, not being with them on a daily basis, dealing with the standard visitation schedule of every other weekend, sometimes Wednesday night dinners, spring break, summer visitation, you know, alternating holidays, even in odd years, you know, the routine. That's standard practice these days. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that that has become the standard practice. And so back to my original statement, my opening statement, how do we get here? Well, again, it's taken a while. You know, this has been developing over the last 30, 40 years, but only now have we started to really see the negative impact of not having men in the household, not having fathers in the house with their children. Because here's the thing. I don't care how strong of a woman you are. You can't teach a boy how to become a man. I don't care how strict of a mother you are. You cannot teach your young daughters how to respect themselves and what to look for in a man once they come of age and start dating and start thinking about getting married to somebody. There's only so much a single mom can do. Now, look, I take my hat off to single moms. No disrespect. I'm not trying to slight you or minimize the things that you do. But what I would ask of you in return is, let's not minimize the role or the impact of fathers. Also, right? There are some women out there who are of the opinion that they can do it all by themselves and that they don't need a man and that they can raise these kids all by themselves. And we've all heard it. We've heard those statements, that refrain in hip hop songs and, you know, R&B ballads, and that rallying cry, from single moms, strong, you know, women who have had to shoulder the burden of raising their kids by themselves. And look, I feel for you. I respect you, but you're wrong. Okay. You're wrong. If you think you can do it all by yourself and do it effectively, do it in a way where your children are not going to be negatively impacted or feel some sense of loss or just grow up missing certain things in their life, you are wrong, because that's exactly what happens. Okay. I'm speaking from experience. Okay. I was a child of divorce. And then later in my adult life, I end up going through a divorce. So I've seen both sides of the equation. I know that when I was a kid, my parents got divorced around when I was 9 years old. And I had a younger brother who was 3 years younger than me. So he was around six. And then I had a younger sister, my only sister, who was about 18 months old at the time. So she was a baby. I take that back. No, my sister was like younger than that. She was less than a year old when my dad or mom and dad got divorced. So I've seen this thing from both sides. I can tell you, being a kid, going into that preteen stage, 9, 10, 11, 12, and then ultimately into a teenager and into a young adult, I needed my dad during those formative years of transitioning from child to young man. I wished I would have had access more or access to my dad more often. I wish I would have been able to have a solid, healthy relationship with my dad during those years, because those years are most critical, especially for boys, as you're trying to transition from boy into young man and eventually into full-grown adult man. There's a lot that happens during the ages of 11 and 18. And so while my mom did her best, she's a strong woman, she couldn't do everything. You know, in my case, I did have a stepfather. I'll get into that more later, because I think I want to dedicate an entire episode to stepfathers and stepmothers as well, because while I respect stepfathers and I respect anybody who steps in on behalf of a biological parent who is not available or who's not there, there's some concerns there. There's some boundaries. There's some things that need to be said and looked at in order to make things work for all parties involved. So I'm going to dedicate a specific episode around step parents and share my story and my thoughts on that later. But, you know, back to kind of my experience, you know, I grew up in the late 80s. You know, I came of age in the late 80s, early 90s. And so one of the things I was looking for during that period of life between the ages of 11 and 18, I was looking for strong male role models. And it was tough, especially growing up in the environment that I grew up in, which was small town Texas. I grew up in a town where most of the people, or at least most of the African Americans in that town, were related to me, either on my mom's side or my dad's side. Very small, tight-knit community. But there weren't a lot of strong male role models. There were men around, you know, pastors, coaches. But I didn't have uncles that were, you know, readily available. Everybody in my community was older, you know, much older. We're talking, the men in my community were, you know, 60 years of age and older, right? They didn't have time for, you know, a little 11, 12 year old kid. They didn't want to be bothered. You know, they were in the twilight of their life. But what I will say is that I did learn something from them. I learned from the deacons in my church how to be patient, how to choose your words carefully. And when you speak, speak with authority and make sure that whatever message you're carrying or trying to communicate is clear. I did learn that. And that those lessons have served me well in my adult life. But I didn't have anybody to go fishing with. I didn't have anybody take me fishing. I didn't have anybody to play basketball with. you know, in my driveway or at the park. I didn't have anybody to sit down with me and explain to me the birds and the bees, you know, how to interact with girls, you know, how to make friends, make male friends, be friends with other males who are naturally competitive, right? And do so in a healthy manner. I had to figure out all of that stuff on my own. And most of that I didn't figure out until I was a young adult and in the military by that time. So, you know, it would have been nice. But I will tell you what I did have. I had some great TV shows. You know, in the late 80s, there were some really great TV shows on with strong male role models. And the first one on my list was Good Times. Now, Good Times, you know, that show ran in the 70s, right? But in the late 80s, the reruns, it was in what they call syndication. And so you could count on an episode of Good Times every day, you know, at 4 p.m. In some cases, it was 5 p.m. But every day I'd get home from school and I'd go home and turn on Good Times because James Evans was my role model. Those first couple seasons of Good Times, James Evans was the star of that show, right? You had JJ, you know, the goofy teenager, you know, tall and lanky, considered himself a ladies' man. And he was funny, right? You know, the famous catchphrase, dynamite. That was great. But I was looking at James Evans because he was the strong father, hardworking. He was the disciplinarian. He laid down the law. He set the tone in that house. And I respected Florida Evans as well. You know, she was the strong matriarch of the family and she could, you know, make it happen. She made sure the kids, you know, ate well, they dressed well when, you know, the clothes were a little raggedy because they were living in Chicago in the hood. She patched them up. She, you know, was a counselor. You know, she was a strong woman of faith. But she also respected her husband and she listened to him. She didn't make any major decisions without his input and without running it by him. And that's the way families used to be. That's the way marriages used to be. And not to go on a tangent here, because I'm not a sexist person. I got no problem with strong-willed women. I got no problem with women who, you know, are vocal. But what I do have a problem with is when women disrespect their man, their husband. I have a problem when women try to prioritize their own opinions and feelings over that of the man or of the family. And that's largely the reason why most marriages don't work today. Because the two people in the marriage are not operating as partners. And we're going to get into that more because I think that needs to be, that's a topic that needs to be discussed. How to respect one another in a marriage, how to know your role, how to work with each other, how to make compromises, and how to lead your family together. You need to be properly balanced. You know, the biblical term, equally yoked. And there's a whole chapter on this in the book of Peter, 1 Peter chapter 3. He tells you how wives should act. He tells you how husbands should act. But again, we'll get into that in another episode. But back to Good Times, man, that was my show. Another show that came, you know, on the air in the late 80s was The Cosby Show. Bill Cosby was my TV dad. And I know later in life, he got himself into a little trouble and we were all shocked to find out what this brother had been doing in the 60s and 70s. And even, you know, more recently in the early 2000s, he did some bad things. He took advantage of some women and it's a shame. I'm not condoning that. I'm not giving him a pass. But what I'll tell you is this. For those 4 or 5 years that The Cosby Show ran and then ultimately the spinoff for a different world with Lisa Bonet and, you know, the whole college scene and all the characters, Dwayne Wade and, just all the characters from that show. Look, those shows were on at a very pivotal time in my young adult, well, really teenage, my teenage years and my young adult years. I learned from Bill Cosby, or from watching The Cosby Show, that you could be intelligent, a professional, raise a wonderful family, instill lessons, and do it all while having a little bit of fun. You could be a professional man married to a professional woman, both of you doing very, very well, making, you know, lots of money, but raising a family with solid core values. They work together. And that was the first time I had really seen that. Because again, you go back to Good Times, they were poor. They were in a low income socioeconomic status. They were living in the hood and the projects. Okay. It's Cabrini Green in Chicago. I believe it's on the West Side. I got to see it in 1993 when I was stationed at Great Lakes, Illinois, and I took the train down to Chicago, and I was like 19 at the time. This is early 90s. And so I got to see the place where Good Times was filmed and you know, where the show was based. But going from Good Times, where you're seeing the stereotypical struggling low-income family in the projects just trying to, you know, survive and, you know, stay close, stay with one another in the process. You take the leap from that to The Cosby Show, where you had a doctor, a husband who's a doctor, OBGYN, gynecologist, and a wife who's a lawyer, black, doing well, six kids, you know, living in New York City. And they're funny. They're intelligent. They enjoy art. All the kids are intelligent as well. You know, each one had their own different personality and their own eccentric nature, but everybody was healthy. Everybody loved each other. You know, there wasn't constant conflict and nobody hated each other. Nobody called each other out of their name. You know, the husband and wife weren't bickering with one another, and the wife wasn't domineering towards the wife wasn't condescending and disrespectful to the husband, and the husband was not disrespectful or condescending to his wife. You know, Cliff and Claire Huxtable, man, they were the role models. They were the example of what a healthy marriage should look like, you know? And so that's what I took from that. And so when I became a young adult and I started dating, I wanted a Claire Huxtable. I wanted a beautiful black woman who was intelligent, who, you know, had a career and who could not only support me and help me build a kingdom, help me build a lifestyle that, you know, was going to be beneficial to us both, but also could be a great mother, a great role model to our children. And so that was my template. Claire Huxtable was my template, and Bill Cosby, you know, Cliff Huxtable, his character, was what I aspired to be. And then you move to different world, and, you know, I didn't know if I was ever going to go to college. I didn't know if I could afford it, but I wanted to go because they made it look so much fun. You know, these kids, Lisa Bonet's character, Denise Huxtable and Dwayne Wayne and you know, all the other characters, they were attending an HBCU, historically black college university. I believe it was Hillman. And they all were intelligent, fun-loving individuals who were proud to be black, proud of who they were. They understood their identity. They understood their purpose in this world to, you know, not only achieve, but also lay the foundation for those who would come behind them. And I felt like that was Bill Cosby's whole purpose back then, was to make young Black kids feel confident and know that they could achieve if they just applied themselves. Now, there were a couple of other shows on at that same, during that same time, Family Matters, right? You know, another Chicago family where the husband was a police officer and the mom, I believe she was a homemaker. They had a couple kids, and you know, you probably remember the main character or one of the most memorable characters from that show, which was Steve Urkel. You know, Steve was funny. You know, he was the nerdy Black kid, which was another key character that you hadn't seen very often on TV. But Steve was unapologetically himself. He was a nerd. He was awkward, but he didn't apologize for it. And that was what made his character so genuine and so enjoyable. Steve taught me that you can be awkward and you can be smart, and that's okay. That's okay. And so I just enjoy those shows. But after those shows went off the air, I'd say around mid-90s, man, things fell off. TV sitcoms, movies that were produced around that time began to depict fathers as weak, for lack of a better term, just weak. You know, fathers became bumbling idiots. Nickelodeon was coming on strong at that time. And I remember seeing, I was a young adult at this time, but I had younger siblings, and I would see some of the shows that they would watch whenever I'd come home on leave from the military. And every show had this father role where the dad had no authority. The kids were sarcastic towards him. They made fun of him. The wives spoke to him in a condescending manner, like, "Oh, you poor baby, you're such an idiot, but I still love you." Dad was always aloof. The dad characters were aloof. They had no idea what was going on within the family. When something broke or needed to be fixed, it was this long drawn out process of dad making, you know, 1,000 mistakes before finally getting it right. And, you know, the mom and the children would, you know, just look down on him, take pity on him because he was such an idiot. And that theme, that message began to proliferate, I'd say from the mid-90s up until most recently. To be honest with you, it's been going on for the last 20, 30 years, where men, especially fathers, are depicted as weak. And, you know, the other characters in the sitcom or the movie treat him like he's a buffoon. Well, it's spilled over into our larger society. And I feel like that's where we are today. Men are constantly disrespected, taken advantage of. We have no authority in the home. We have, you know, we're caricatures of ourselves, of our former selves. And our kids have suffered as a result. You know, children need their fathers. Fathers are important. Fathers set the tone. We are the disciplinarians. We give our children validation. We teach them, we guide them on how to survive and how to problem solve and how to think critically. Kids need that, whether it's a boy or a girl. They need those teachings, those learnings. If you don't have that, what you have is what we have today, by and large, with this Gen Z generation and Gen Alpha after that. I have a daughter who's 11 years old, and she's considered Gen Alpha. What you've got now is a bunch of kids that don't know how to problem solve. You got a bunch of kids that don't know how to think critically. They want everything given to them. They want everything done for them. And they don't want to have to lift a finger or to think about how to resolve an issue. They also don't know how to communicate. They can't express their feelings clearly or in a manner where you can understand. I'm going through that right now with my 15-year-old. And it just blows my mind how our society accepts the fact that a lot of these kids nowadays cannot think critically, problem solve, communicate in a healthy way. And instead of addressing the issues with the children, we're too busy trying to ostracize fathers and attack fathers and eliminate fathers. Our society puts single moms on a pedestal, but it denigrates men. It minimizes fathers and instead penalizes them financially, emotionally, and even physically. You know how many fathers are in jail because they couldn't pay their child support? You know how many fathers are homeless because they couldn't pay child support? It's sad. The numbers are crazy. There are more fathers incarcerated because of missed child support payments or, you know, because they are homeless and had to resort to crime to survive, or because they committed assault or even murder in some cases because they were denied visitation with their kids. It's a lot. I've done the research. It's a lot. And fundamentally, all they wanted to do was have the opportunity to be a good father, to be involved in their children's lives, and to be able to survive themselves. But again, the child support system, the family court system, and the child support system is set up to penalize fathers outside the household, you know, depending on how many kids you got and what state you live in, what state, city, county you live in, man, they could take up to 30% of your check for child support. Now, I don't know, again, I don't know where you live, and I don't know what sort of lifestyle your kids are accustomed to, but 30% is a lot. You know, the math, when you do the math and you look at your check, you got your gross pay and you got your net pay. The difference between the two, gross pay is what they say they pay you. Net pay is what you actually take home. The difference is taxes, Social Security. There might be some retirement, you know, medical benefits. They take all of those costs out of your check before you get your check. You know, they subtract it from the gross pay. So the net pay is what you actually take home. Well, guess what child support does? Child support takes 30% from that net pay. So you already been hit by 20% paying taxes, you know, medical benefits, Social Security. You already got 20% taken away, more or less. And then the family court system comes through and takes another 30, you know, in cases where you got three kids, at least three kids, right? That adds up to 50% of your check, meaning you get only half your money. And you're expected to live off of that. It's sad, man. I got so many things I could say about that, but people know it's not right. We know that the family court system is unfair. We know that the equilibrium between mother's rights and father's rights is off. Their mothers have way more rights than fathers do, and it's sad. It's ridiculous. It's enough to make you want to cuss, man. Real talk. And I know some of y'all know what I'm talking about, and you probably feel me when I say that. It's enough to make you cuss. It's enough to convince you that you should commit a crime to try to right the wrongs and make that system a little bit more fair and just. But that's not the way to go. That's not the route to go. That's not the way to solve that problem. I'm going to close with this. You know, we have got to take back our authority, our position as fathers. Whether you are in the home or not, you need to take back your position. You need to take back your authority. You need to let your kids know that I'm not your friend. I'm your father. I'm here to do a job. a job that was given to me by God the Creator, the one that created you and me. My role matters. Fathers matter. My job is to raise you, to teach you, to guide you, and to correct you when you get out of line. Because at the end of the day, when I'm standing in front of my Creator, I've got to give a testimony, if you will. I've got to give an account for what I did with my blessings. And one of those blessings are my children. I've got to give an account of what I did to bring you to God first, teach you his ways and teach you about him, help you establish your own relationship with God. And then I've got to give an account for what I taught you that would make you a healthy, productive citizen, one who could not only lead others, but serve others in a way that would be pleasing to him. And that takes work. It takes commitment. And nobody on earth should get in your way when it comes to that. Not the mother, not the legal system, nobody. Nobody should get in your way or get in the way of you being a good father. And so we can't let that happen. We got to stay committed. We got to stay focused. And we got to avoid the pitfalls and the traps that have been set up to derail us from that. And look, the attacks are going to come from all sides. The attacks are going to come from the court, the legal system. The attacks are going to come from the mother of your children. The attacks are going to come from your children themselves, your friends, your family. The attacks are going to come from all sides, man. Just know that. It's just part of it. But that's no excuse to give up. That's no excuse to, forget your duty. There's no excuse to not be there for your kids and to have some level of relationship with them and to try to enjoy them and do the things that we're supposed to do as men, as fathers, put them on the right track so that they can prosper and so that not only can you be blessed, but your children and your children's children will be blessed. It's about that inheritance that it speaks of in Proverbs that we are supposed to leave for our children as men. That's all I got for today. Again, guys, thanks for all the support. I'm praying for each and every one of y'all. I hope you pray for me too, man. We're going to get through this. In the next episode, we're going to start to dig into the book and start talking about that father acronym and getting into the details as to what we can do to maintain our position in the lives of our children and set them up for success. Anyway, that's it for now, man. Thank y'all again for listening. We'll see you on the next episode.